This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Mass media offerings aren't famous for their textured and nuanced characterizations. Rare is the film or TV series that doesn't trade in stereotypes. Asian American women have certainly noticed. They're often portrayed as submissive, subservient, and well-educated. But lately, they've been speaking up and talking back to these damaging stereotypes. And today, they're using social media to start a conversation about identity. This week on Twitter, the hashtag NotYourAsianSidekick is being used to combat oppression against Asian American women. Sui Park is a freelance writer and an activist and the pioneer of that hashtag, NotYourAsianSidekick. And she joins us right now. Sui, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us about the inspiration for Not Your Asian Sidekick.
Well, I wanted to make an accessible conversation about Asian American feminism and kind of shift our historical consciousness so that we could join other women of color in solidarity. But I do want to say that it's been a really long time coming, and I don't mean in my own work or my life. I mean in the sense that this isn't a, you know, feminist wave, and it's not a temporary movement. It's something that generations before me have been working on before, and so I think it was just the right time to kind of start having this conversation.
Well, tell us about these stereotypes, how they play out, how embedded they are in our everyday conversation and media offerings.
Well, there's a very narrow definition of what Asian women can be. They're rarely center stage, and if they are, you know, they have to fit the stereotype of being an angry Asian or of being the model minority, neither of which paints a fair picture of who Asian American women are or what we are capable of.
When you talk about a model minority, what do you mean?
A model minority is a minority or a person of color who has overcome obstacles to kind of fulfill the myth of meritocracy. And so what I'm trying to say is that the model minority doesn't exist and that we need to get rid of that notion if we're really committing to combating racism fully.
Do you think that this is a stereotype that has attached itself more vigorously to Asian American women? The model minority.
I actually think that the model minority affects both men and women. But I think what's important to see is that because of the hypermasculinity in white heteropatriarchy, Asian men feel a lot of pressure to kind of sit at the same table as white men. And in doing so, they are often feminized, they are often put down. But as a result, instead of seeing whiteness as a you know, thing that we need to dismantle, a lot of times white men internalize that patriarchy, try to become hypermasculine, and really put women down, other Asian women, their sisters, in order to make themselves feel okay about their own masculinity.
Well, again, tell us again how that plays out. Because as you say, nobody walks around, I mean, I don't walk around acutely aware of my privilege or the kind of damage that it's doing. And if I think I'm a nice guy, that's enough. So how would it play out? How would I exhibit these things? And how does the media then reinforce a privilege that I have, but I don't recognize as a privilege?
I think that's the very thing that we need to worry about, is that this ignorance doesn't just happen. It's because people are born with privilege that makes them completely unaware of the structural advantages that they do have. And something that I want to make clear is that really committing yourself to doing this work and to fighting these large oppressive structures is not simply about self-improvement and overcoming, you know, say, racist or sexist thoughts. It's realizing that even having those thoughts, even thinking that you're perhaps a good person, doesn't mean that you aren't being complicit in a larger system. So it's about shifting our consciousness from just talking about things to then actually taking action.
It would seem that the stereotypes when it comes to Asian women are insidious in that not all of them are things that we would consider negative. Well-educated, I mean, we sort of joke about good at math, but a lot of the stereotypes are many traits and virtues that we would consider positive, right?
Right, but that's the thing, is that positive stereotypes can't really exist without perpetuating the fact that in its comparison there are negative stereotypes about other groups of people. And so I think this is something that whiteness does to make people of color fight for a scrap or a piece of anything or to sit at the table, is that they create these stereotypes to perpetuate, for example, anti-blackness by saying that Asian Americans are the model minority. They're not angry. They're, you know, participating. So what's happening with these other groups of people? And so I think we really need to think about the role of positive stereotypes, not just in the fact that it creates a hard mold for Asian Americans to fit, because we are a very big group of people with a lot of, difference in intersectional identities and in our own struggles, but also what it does to non-Asian people of color.
Tell us what happened when you created the hashtag Not Your Asian Sidekick. First of all, what was behind the hashtag, the name itself, and what kind of response have you gotten?
Well, I've been doing women of color organizing with a group called Insight, Women of Color Against Violence, and I haven't been there very long, but I found that it's been a really fresh space. It's kind of not really trying to find its place in white feminism, and it's also not trying to find a place for women among places that are really steeped with patriarchy. And in doing so, it made me think about, if I'm getting this sort of knowledge, then maybe I need to kind of build a bigger base and spread, this consciousness to other women so that we can start having these conversations, focusing on the difficult issues that might be uncomfortable, and then finding our place to work with other women of color in solidarity.
So what kind of response have you gotten, and where has it come from? Is it mostly Asian women, or who all is following you?
I think a lot of people are watching, which is okay, but at the same time, this isn't for the white gaze, and this isn't for us to find our place in corporate America and become, ironically, the Asian sidekick. This is really about empowering women, so I really can't be bothered by the other people that are paying attention. I think the responses have been good. I think a frustration that I had earlier, prior to starting this conversation, was, why are Asian women saying we aren't considered women of color, and we need to be invited to be women of color? And I think that conversations like that show that we need to have an understanding of what it means to have a political identity and to choose to be a woman of color, and to not walk into woman of color spaces to demand that Asian American issues be at the forefront, but to find solidarity and support and unified issues across the board.
It seems like you create a great deal, or find a great deal of complexity, when you talk about the various identities that you've already named: being Asian, being female, are you a woman of color, should you be included in that conversation or in that group. What are the advantages of finding yourselves and being included in the group of women of color, and is there another advantage in being a kind of separate group, because Asian American women have very separate issues to deal with?
I would say it's a both and. I think that women of color have definitely shaped my understanding and done so much work. And I have to say that Indigenous feminism, Chicana feminism, Black feminism has shaped so much of my own understanding of what feminism as a woman of color means. And then on the flip side, Asian American women sure do have their own issues to talk about and do deserve to be heard and advocated for. And there are so many of us. There's billions of us. And I just wonder, what would happen if we were able to activate our community, to start these conversations at an earlier age than, say, myself, who only had this understanding towards the end of college? What would happen if people went into spaces with intention, or entered college with the understanding of, we need an Asian American studies, and we're not going to play into these multicultural politics? I think there's a lot of potential there. And so I think I'm just really interested in seeing what can happen if we really continue making this a movement and not just a trend.
It seems to me one of the complexities and one of the challenges is to find a way to raise consciousness about the particularities of every group, of every identity group, that finds itself oppressed and otherwise disadvantaged in the social architecture and economic architecture on the one hand. But on the other hand, dividing into all of those subgroups is precisely what that architecture wants you to do. And is it a matter of wanting a piece of that pie, or finding baking a whole new pie?
I think it's about dismantling the pie, as you say, as it already exists, while we try to build our own. So we don't want a seat at the table. We want to abolish that structure in its entirety. And then at the same time, we want to build our own structure where there's room for a diversity of people of color voices. So not just mine, but a variety, like disabled women and queer women and South Asian women, Muslim women, all different faiths and backgrounds, really finding unity and continuing these conversations, which, of course, can't happen on mainstream media, where, of course, we are reduced to one person yet again.
By the way, I hope the phrase dismantling the pie has gone viral already. It's a fantastic phrase, and it's a good one. But what kind of response you get? I mean, is that the response you're getting now that this hashtag has gone viral? People are clearly interested. Is that what they're interested in doing? What sorts of, as you're pulling people together, what are the interests of people who have been attracted to this movement? What are they saying?
Well, first of all, I want to say that there's probably a better word that we could use than pie, but I was just
no, that
using
was my
the rhetoric.
Fault. That was my
yeah,
fault.
Yeah, I would call it, let's name it white heteropatriarchy. That's the pie we're talking about, right?
That ain't sexy either, but go ahead.
Capitalist corporate America. There's a lot of words we could use.
All right.
Well, I think that there's been varied responses, and I think that's also to be expected. But this was really just about opening up the conversation. And I've been, you know, reading my mentions. I've been looking at the hashtag. And the whole purpose of it was for me to kind of gauge where we were and what issues we really need to provide information on, what voices aren't being heard, to see kind of, you know, the conflict, in especially inside of AAPI people, and then kind of think about where we need to push further. And I think it's okay that I'm taking my time. I haven't been writing recently because of all of this. And I want to be really sure that I connect with the women, the Asian American women who have been doing this work for a lot longer than me and have much more knowledge than me.
Well, let's keep this conversation going, Sui. I'm going to take a break right here, but we're going to come back and talk more about this. Sui Park is a freelance writer and activist and the creator of the Twitter hashtag NotYourAsianSidekick. Our conversation will continue on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today we're talking about Asian American feminism and a recent Twitter hashtag, Not Your Asian Sidekick. Sui Park is with us, a freelance writer and activist who created that hashtag. Joining us now on the program, Jennifer Ho and Sarah Sandman. Jennifer Ho is a professor of English and Asian American Studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Welcome back, Jennifer. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Also with us, Sarah Sandman, a student at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, a member of Alpha Kappa Delta Phi. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You have become one of the faces for that hashtag, and one of your, I guess your photo now is on also the Who Needs Feminism campaign. So you've been at this for a while. Tell us about your interest in this and what you thought when this particular hashtag came up and your idea about this movement right now.
Well, our photo for the Who Needs Feminism campaign actually first went viral about a year ago, back in September. And from that point on is when I first really got into the Asian American feminism movement. And it died away after about a month of really having powerful discussion around it. And then when Sui started this hashtag movement, I saw it resurfacing again. And it just honestly made me very excited that there was finally a point around everyone to organize that this discussion could take place and not have our photo just kind of floating around and having isolated conversations around it.
Well, tell us about your arrival, because I think this will give us some context for this conversation. Your arrival at UNC Chapel Hill and being in a predominantly white sorority.
Well, I think that is when I really first witnessed the effects of the white heteropatriarchy that is very prevalent in the Chapel Hill community. As a member of a historically white sorority during my first year there, it was, I think, very damaging to me personally because I really underwent a lot of those or was victim of a lot of those stereotypes that Asian American women on our campus face. And when I first went into the university, it automatically felt like I had to fit into that mold because you see the girls everywhere. It's predominantly white people. And as an Asian American woman, I felt like pressured to fit into the white sorority girl stereotype.
Well, now
that's
let me,
how I initially got into it.
But let me stop you there, because you joined that sorority, so there had to be, I'm guessing, some kind of change in your understanding of yourself vis-a-vis this society when you joined. Because when you joined, you thought it was must have thought it was like a perfect fit, right?
Yeah, I thought it would be a great college experience to get involved with the sorority.
I mean, is that when you come sort of face-to-face with the idea that how you think about yourself is not how the girls in the white sorority think about you?
Yeah, I really felt like I was being defined more by them and the organization than defining myself and having like a spot there.
Jennifer, give us some perspective on this, the idea that you would come in, because you've had a similar experience when you started at UNC as well, in some ways, the idea that you come in with an idea about yourself in this assimilated egalitarian society, and then you get these messages that are somewhat surprising to you?
Yes. I mean, I think how we identify, like, I guess the way to put it is, when I look at myself in the mirror in the morning, I don't necessarily think, wow, I'm looking at an Asian American straight woman, right, who's able-bodied. I recognize that that's the way that I go about in the world, but I, you know, generally wake up in the morning and I just think I'm me, right? I mean, we all do. But I think one of the things that Sarah recognized in her first year at UNC was that she might have initially thought she's just her and not maybe thought, you know, of the ways that her being read as Asian, her being read as a particular type of Asian ethnicity would always be brought to bear in how she's interacting with people. So similarly, when I'm walking around on campus and I, you know, will encounter somebody who says something that makes me aware of my racial difference, I'm kind of, you know, I'm caught up short, right? So in other words, one time somebody asked me how I was able to do research when I was not fluent in Mandarin. When it was disclosed that I wasn't fluent in Mandarin. So there's a couple of things. One, the assumption that I should be fluent in Mandarin because of my Chinese ancestry. Number two, the lack of understanding that Asian studies is very different than Asian American studies. And then, you know, the kind of questioning about my qualifications. And so that's when, I mean, in a very different way from Sarah, but that's, you know, a moment when I think, oh, I'm being read through a particular racial lens that this person has of me, that I don't, you know, they have a lot of misconceptions about me, about what I do, about what people look like me, speak, you know, the languages yeah. people like me speak, et cetera, et cetera.
So, Sarah, tell us about this. Once you came to this understanding and you realized what was going on, you then transitioned into an Asian interest sorority. Tell us about that and that decision.
That's correct. I guess I de-lettered from the white sorority at the end of my first year, and it was during my fall semester of my second year that I was approached by one of my suite mates who happened to be a member of the sorority. And it seemed completely different through the rush process of getting to know the sorority and its values and the sisters. And that from that point on, when I had joined this Asian interest sorority, is when I really got an understanding of just how the race relations on our campus works and how much of a different society that you can be a part of when you finally are around a group of women that relate to all of these experiences and stereotypes that you've experienced yourself.
Sui, in your short experience with this, have you found that this is somewhat unique for Asian American women? I can only imagine that if you're an African American woman, you sort of never make the assumptions that you're going to join the white sorority and everything's going to be just fine. And I'm wondering if this is somehow, or that you won't be seen as an African American, or if you're Latino, that you won't be seen as Latino. And I wonder if this is different for Asian American women who somehow feel that that's not going to happen to them going in and then have the experience Sarah did.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think that it's not true of everyone, but maybe for college-educated women, maybe it is. Or if you're from maybe a white suburb, it definitely took a lot of knowledge for me to realize that I am a woman of color and for me to come out with that sort of a political identity. But I think that's okay, too, because it's never too late, and I'm just glad that we're starting to have this conversation.
Jennifer, tell us about your experience in navigating this world of women of color.
Well, I think a lot is contextual. And a lot is about region. So it's interesting listening to Sarah and Sui's experiences. I'm probably older than them by about 20 years, and that makes a difference. And I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area in a pretty multiracial, multicultural space. So I went to UC Santa Barbara, that also, in hindsight, had a fairly large Asian American population and had one of the first Asian American studies departments in the nation. So I came into an understanding of myself as politicized as an Asian American pretty early, and was comfortable with that because I had a lot of Asian American friends when I was in high school. And so the idea of being a person of color, a woman of color, which was just being used as a phrase in the late 80s, I would say, right? That's something that I always felt comfortable with because that was a term that was being used in the kind of circles that I was traveling in. I will say that given that history, given my comfort level being Asian American, being in spaces with a lot of Asian American women and a lot of women of different ethnic and racial groups, coming into the South has been interesting because the South is a place that has historically talked about race in black and white terms and only recently has introduced the Latino population as kind of a third prong in a racial triangle. So Asian Americans largely are perceived as being honorary whites. And that was my experience when I first moved here in 2003, that I was told actually to my face, both by white and black Southerners, that Asians really were, for all intents and purposes, white. And I found that disturbing and troubling and odd and peculiar. But I also found that I identified as a woman of color. And so, for example, I was invited to a woman of color faculty event. And I went my first year. And I was the only non-African-American woman in the room. And I literally pulled up the invitation because I thought, oh, I've made a mistake and I've gone to the wrong space. And I double-checked the invitation and I had it right. And that was my first clue that woman of color was actually synonymous with African-American as far as UNC. And but I didn't leave. I stayed and listened and learned. And I have to say, I really respect that given the history of racial violence in the South, that, of course, African-American concerns are very paramount. And there are things that I, as a non-Southerner, have to learn about race and have been really grateful for those conversations. I will also say that I have had wonderful colleagues, both white and black, who also recognize that Asian-Americans have a particular racialized history. And I think we've had really good discussions over the years about that.
Well, let me stick with you for a second, Jennifer, and then ask Sarah and Sui the same question, and whether it's important to be seen as women of color for Asian-Americans and why.
For me it is because I want to be an ally. I want to be an ally to different groups, and that includes African-American women. And so by me entering into spaces as a woman of color and saying I identify as a woman of color, and I think in particular at these meetings, I wouldn't just go to these meetings and then say, well, you know, I want to talk about me and I want to talk about Asian American women, right? I would talk about, this is probably going to raise all sorts of red bells for anybody who's lived in this area for a while, but it was, when the Duke Lacrosse mm-hmm. issue was happening, and I had opinions about that and concerns, particularly about the way that the town and gown divide was being portrayed along racial lines. And I spoke up as somebody who was concerned about that, who was neither white nor black. And I actually think that made a difference because it made people see that I am concerned about these issues. I am an ally around these issues, and I want to be part of that conversation. I may not identify as a black woman, but I am concerned about supporting black women and those issues.
Sui, is it important to you to be seen as a woman of color? Does that matter, and why?
Yeah, it matters a lot to me for this very reason, is that I hear a lot of Asian Americans complaining about a black-white binary without realizing that the hyper-visibility of black people is actually, on purpose, and it's to reinforce this sort of hierarchy type of understanding we have. And I think that as an Asian American, or at least in my experience, I have had access into pretty white spaces, of course, as the token, of course, as the Asian sidekick. But for me, I think that it's really about the choices we make and the coalitions that we choose to build, and really finding solidarity and not just trying to be a helper. So for me, it's really about how do we have a bigger platform and how do we not center our work around white appeasement.
Sarah?
From my experience, I would say that I would consider myself a woman of color, and that I think that's very important, because when I first got into the issues of Asian American feminism, it was through the Who Needs Feminism campaign, which was actually hosted by a Latina interest sorority at our campus. And one of the things that I noticed was a very huge backlash when the image went viral was that there's actually an African American woman and a white woman in the picture that are also members of my sorority. And I think a lot of people had problems with that, because it was always a question of, oh, why is she standing there with these other Asian American women when she's clearly African American, or she's clearly white? There's always the issue of, well, first of all, you don't know them. You don't know if they do have some type of Asian ancestry. And then even if they don't, what's the problem with that? It's about standing in solidarity for all women of color.
Well, and this comes to, raises a question about, you said Asian ancestry, and whether or not you want to identify with a nationality, with a region of the globe, Asian, or whether you want to identify as Asian American, and what those different identity markers mean, Jennifer?
Yeah, no, I think about this a lot. I talk about this a lot in my classes. For me, Asian American is really a deliberate label that I use. And it's, again, one that I came into consciousness with in college. But it's also a label that a lot of people who we would mark as Asian American probably wouldn't call themselves that. So in other words, my parents probably don't identify as Asian American in their everyday lives. They would use that on a census form. They recognize they're Asian American, but they prefer to be called Chinese or Chinese American. But for me, Asian American is a choice that I'm making because it signals a politicized understanding of the way that Asian people in the United States have struggled and been marked as racially other.
Sui, how does that play out for you? Because I can imagine being a Korean American or Chinese American and then being called Asian and think, well, that's just, you're just trying to get, yeah. So it's all you Asian people. I mean, that's how I hear that when I hear it, or how I might hear it if I were a particular nationality that gets very discreetly identified with other nationalities and not with those of us from the East. Sui, how do you hear it?
I hear it like this. I think that we need to be able to hold two things at the same time and realize both the potential and perhaps the negative implications of such a word. And so on one hand, it's what you said. It could be lumping us all together to erase our individual struggles. And then on the flip side, there's a lot of potential there for pan-Asian unity if we're able to hear all those varied voices. And, of course, on one hand, again, I'm upset about being a hyphenated American and what that means, and not being fully, you know, Asian or fully American. And at the same time, I see potential there to kind of be in a third space and start to figure out how can we use this to our advantage to kind of, you know, combat the narrow confines that we're being put in.
And all of this, Jennifer, suggests how much of this labeling is out of our control, right? I mean, the idea that when you use a phrase like people of color, what it might mean for some people is simply a euphemism for African Americans, and that happens a lot. On the other hand, it could broadly mean all of those who are disadvantaged by a political economic structure, and that would be a much broader view. But you're not always in control, so if you use the phrase, you're not sure what the person on the other end, how they interpret that phrase.
Right, which is also sort of like what you encounter as a non-white person in white society, right? That I'm never sure when I go about how people are going to see me. It kind of goes back to the, you know, looking at myself in the mirror. There are going to be interactions I have with people where I become aware that they're seeing me in a particular way and I can't control that, right? So when people ask me where I'm from, or which still happens, most recently at the Staples in Chapel Hill.
And then you say San Francisco, and I say, no, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this guy, actually, it was even better. This guy asked if I was from Hawaii, and I said no. And he said, are you sure? and I said, yeah, I'm sure. And he said, no, because you look just like people in Hawaii.
Yeah, you look like Barack Obama.
Thank you. Thank you. Which, you know, what he meant was Hawaii is a space that has 70% Asian American population, right? And I just said, yeah, no, I'm not from Hawaii. And, you know, kind of suggesting, like, let's just drop it. And he's like, no, where are you from? Right. And it wasn't enough for me to say Chapel Hill. Right. He had to go, like, he just went further back. No, before Chapel Hill, Massachusetts. No, before that. Where were you born? New York City. No. Where are your parents from? I mean, wow. So the idea that, you know, it was okay for this guy to just keep prodding me about where I was from, speaks exactly to that kind of white privilege.
Well, I wish we had more time, but I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Jennifer Ho is a professor of English and Asian American Studies at UNC Chapel Hill. Sui Park is a freelance writer and activist, the creator of Not Your Asian Sidekick. And Sarah Sandman is a student at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and a member of Alpha Kappa Delta Phi. Thank all of you for being on the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Coming up next, some holiday buying tips for those who love to read. Stay with us on The State of Things.